Here we go, WMFO, Medford, and you're listening to The Voice Mobile. I'm your host, Joyce The Voice. A little out of breath. Had a rough bunch of kids over at the high, middle, I was going to say elementary school. They acted like elementary kids. Oh my gosh, they just would not be quiet. What can I say? Chatter, chatter, jibber, jabber, up and out of their seats, drove me nuts. Anyway, some learning did take place in spite of it all, but I was not a happy camper. I don't have much tolerance for people just talking when there's a teacher in the room and they're supposed to be listening. Okay, children, are you listening? Anyway, so you should know that in a few minutes, I'm going to welcome Craig Sonnenfeld to the microphone. He's my guest today. Guitarist, composer, and he will be joining me in just a few minutes. He has a couple of CDs out, and we'll be telling you more about that. And so I'm going to put something on of his. Okay. So you can have a sense of what we might be hearing and call friends. Tell them to tune in. Okay, so it is loading. Aha, we're loaded.
He never had a chance in hell. From the day that he was born, everyone who touched his life was either desperate or torn. Guns and drugs surviving how you can. That's the way this side of town. Did he have to meet a violent end? Another day, another sun gone down. Well, time was wasting on the corner where the deal was going down. Someone got his signals crossed and bullets rocked him to the ground. Still don't know why this scene had to be, why the violence is unbound. Another senseless urban tragedy. Bird. buried him beneath a pine that at least provides some shade. No one came to say a prayer or to throw him a parade. Nothing about him on the evening news, and no headline can be found. But there's really no one to
Okay, so that was from a CD called Return to Shore by Craig Sonnenfeld, and he will be joining us in just a few minutes. And let's see if I can read what the... I can't read. Oh, if I had my glasses on, that would help. Let's see. Looks like it's New Roots Records. Good. Little tiny. Okay, so I want to share something with you, and I don't think, just trying to see if I've, this is by Moshe Feiglin, The Subtle War Against Israel. The soldier in Hebron shouldn't have had to pull the trigger and kill the terrorist who had just attempted to murder his comrade. The officers in the area should have done so. And the order should have come from the chief of staff, the minister of security, and the prime minister. It should have been an order that was as clear as day and made public to all. Let me explain. The seminal event that brought about the establishment of the State of Israel was the Holocaust, in which Jewish lives were considered worthless or less. This view was held not only by the Nazis and their accomplices, but by the entire world. The Americans and the British did not bother to waste even one or two bombs to halt the death industry and save Jewish lives. In other words, Hitler's speeches and the culture that he created, which negated the right of Jewish existence, filtered down and strongly influenced the world, both actively and passively. The entire existence of the State of Israel was designed first and foremost to reverse this reality. It is important to note that the State of Israel has always based its right to exist on this very point, on the restoration of the right of the Jews to exist and the natural legitimacy of Jewish lives. Holocaust Museum Yad Vashem, which exhibits what happened to Jews bereft of a state, has become our ultimate holy temple, which every visiting foreign dignitary must visit to pay his respects. Ensuring national existence, however, is nothing more than the foundation for the actualization of our national destiny. After two generations of avoidance of our destiny, our existence also becomes meaningless and loses its legitimacy. That is how, slowly but surely, the life of the enemy becomes more important than the lives of our citizens and soldiers. Like Alice in Wonderland, the more that we flee our destiny for the imagined safety of jet fighters, submarines, and flak jackets, the more we find ourselves bereft of existential legitimacy, returning to the place from which we fled, the place where Jewish lives become cheaper by the day. For years, I tried to convince Yalon and Netanyahu that Israel must attack Iran. First of all, because of Ahmadinejad's calls for the destruction of Israel. And only second, because of the technical security problem that the Iranian bomb creates. I explained time and time again that the Holocaust did not begin in 1939 when the war broke out. It began in 1933 with the rise of the Nazis to power and the speeches made by the leader of the German nation calling for the destruction of the Jews. Those speeches were the beginning of the process of delegitimization of Jewish existence. The red line undermining the legitimacy of existence of the Jews was crossed again by the Iranian Holocaust deniers. The entire world expected the state that had been born on the ashes of Auschwitz to respond with fury. To emphasize just this point, Ahmadinejad took the trouble to make an open speech calling for Israel's destruction right at our border fence. I will call for their destruction and they will not harm me because they themselves recognize and cooperate with the negation of their own legitimacy. With the process of their destruction, his actions said. My attempts to convince Israel's leaders failed. The result is that those words have remained in the air and we feel their effect. Just like Germany in the 1930s, Iran, which calls for the destruction of the Jews, has remained a legitimate and courted member of the UN. Israel's status and the legitimacy of Jewish existence are dissipating. Ultimately, Iran will have the bomb, which, as above, is the secondary danger after delegitimization. I can't even say that word. The brandished knife or scissors received on our part with moral hesitation achieve the same effect as Ahmadinejad's words. They undermine the right of all Jews to exist. It is once again legitimate to slaughter a Jew simply because he is a Jew. It is still permissible to harm the terrorist, but only on the basis of the value of self-defense, because the terrorist is just, quote-unquote. Our ethical, quote-unquote, rigor over the terrorist rights, quote-unquote, confirms the world's conviction that we also understand that this land belongs to the terrorist and that he is the good guy in this story. The result is that very quickly, the self-defense principle also stops working for us. It is also forbidden to harm a terrorist. All we can do is try to shoot down the missile that he shot, and only while it is still in the air. We all understand that this is the way to lose. And then, even if we retreat from all the territory and give them flowers all day long, nobody will come to help us. Our friendly neighbors will always be forgiven and even liked after they slaughter us. Ahmadinejad and the knife-wielding terrorists from Hebron are on the same axis. Both challenge the right of the Jews for sovereign existence, essentially the right to exist. Please do not be confused. This is not a national territorial dispute. We have no common border with Iran, and the last thing that the Arabs of Hebron want is a state. Did you ever hear of a Jordanian soldier stabbed in Hebron before 1967? But you did hear that 67 Jews were slaughtered in Hebron in 1929 before the State of Israel was established. We are dealing with the negation of the legitimacy of Jewish sovereignty of any type on the face of the earth, and particularly in the Middle East. In this respect, with scissors in the hands of the Arab teenager, are more dangerous than the Iranian bomb. In Western culture, which associates morality with weakness, the scissors are much more convincing and thus negate our legitimacy more than the atomic bomb. This is not a national territorial war, a war of interest between two nations with similar cultures, a war in which rules of engagement such as the Geneva Convention can exist. This is not a war that ends with the victory of one of the sides or with a compromise. This is a war of total destruction, bereft of any ethical rules. It is a war in which the premeditated slaughter of women and children is acceptable and desirable and viewed as legitimate, while we, who tie our own hands and endanger our soldiers in our quest for morality, are always marked as the bad guys. Why? Because this is the most dangerous evil. It is confusing evil without tanks and jets. It is evil that does not strike with armed force. It is evil that searched for and found our greatest weakness, our lost sense of the justice of our cause. When you breach just the tiniest of openings and give it legitimacy, you have fallen down a slippery slope and lost everything. Just a little bit more, folks.
We try to evade our destiny and exchange justice for ethicality. Time and again, we make the open fire rules more stringent. We sacrifice hundreds of soldiers in our failed attempt to win some legitimacy in the merit of our ethicality. We do not attack civilians. We do not shoot at mosques. We send our sons into the alleyways and tunnels. We will not bomb from the air, and we will not turn off electricity and water. We try to maintain all the rules of the Western world, and we have remained the bad guys in this story. Why? Because it is impossible to exchange justice for ethicality. Even worse, when you surrender your destiny and your justice in the process and base your entire existence on the ethical code, then you are tested there and only there on the ethical playing field. But the ethical playing field is really a killing field. To remain there, we pay with the blood of our soldiers and civilians. The only way to get off the killing field is to fight back with the same weapons. At the moment that Ahmadinejad says that Israel must be destroyed, his life must become illegitimate. Israel should have eliminated him. If a knife-wielding terrorist comes to murder Jews, he must be eliminated immediately. His life has become illegitimate. He must be eliminated with no strings attached to the ethical killing field, which, in its current context, is patently unethical, upon which he hides. The elimination must be immediate, on the spot, with no courtroom proceedings. Elimination of the terrorist is vital because he exchanges the challenge and question mark over the legitimacy of Jewish existence with a clear exclamation point. Any other procedure provides a shred of legitimacy, and the slippery slope waits at its threshold. A terrorist must never live to the day of his trial, even if he were to receive the death penalty at its end. A judicial proceeding raises him up to the level of a partner in the discussion, and thus his claim must be evaluated. Maybe we really don't have the right to live. We'll let the judges decide. There are situations and planes upon which the court has no place. War is clearly such a situation. The war in which we currently find ourselves is the most difficult and subtle of all Israel's wars. This is by Moshe Feiglin, and you won't hear it anywhere else, I can assure you. So, that's what we do on the voicemobile. But we also play music. We also try to soothe the spirit of the soul. And Craig, I'm going to put your mics up. Let's see. We have, let's just see which one is which. I need to see a number. Is that three? Mic three, good. Okay, so that's the guitar and number four. Hello?
Four?
Yeah, you got it. Okay, so okay. Craig is in position. So I'm glad to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Joyce.
In spite of my haranguing. Well, I'll tell you. Somebody has to do it. So,
and you're the one.
Yes. So Craig has been performing a lot in the area, and he'll tell us in a bit about other things that are going on. And as I mentioned, he has a couple of CDs. Redemption is one of them, and we heard from Return to Shore, which is the latest.
Return to Shore is the newest one.
The newest one. And I love the beautiful artwork on the cover. Who did the artwork?
The front drawing and inside is by my daughter, Amanda.
Oh, it's lovely.
And the photograph on the back is by Don Tassone, who's
nice.
a host at in Providence at the Mediator Stage
open mic.
And Leisha Sky, who's a singer-songwriter, put the whole package together. And
very nice.
Another local person, Ira Grohlman, manufactured it.
Wow. So, you got it all done in-house. That's fantastic.
Well, also, both Redemption and Return to Shore were recorded and produced by Sam Baylor, who's a 19-year-old, I would say he's a prodigy, both as a musician and as a producer. He goes to Emerson College here in Boston.
Well, that's a great recommendation. I'm going to write that down.
Sam Baylor, B-A-L-E-R, and he does some of the background instruments on both albums.
Nice. Well, that's great. These are all wonderful local folks.
Yep.
So, would you like to start us off with something? It looks like you're kind of ready.
I'm ready.
You're ready.
I'd like to do, I remain hopeful that someday we could live in peace.
Yes.
That might be naive on my part, but I've been that way all my life, so I'm not going to give it up now. And I'd like to do this song of mine called Everyone Wants to Go to Paradise.
It's good.
Till late at night, it's getting harder just to see the light. People just seem to get more cruel. If you point it out, they call you a fool. I don't know how it all will end. Grieving ones, their clothes will rend. World is turning and I don't know just how far these things can go. And no one wants to pay the price, but everyone wants to go to paradise. Well, I don't know, but I've been told mercy is worth more than gold. You wear your religion upon your sleeve, but if anyone needs your help, you just leave. And politicians play lying games. World is burning and who's to blame? Do you hate your neighbor more than yourself, or do you just envy all of his wealth? To sacrifice, but everyone wants to go to paradise. Brother, when you please, but it won't set your mind at ease. You pile your bounty up to the sky, but it won't help you when you die. And all this as the world still turns, seems like we will never learn. We hold some after-death ideal, when right here this green earth is real. And if our hearts weren't cold as ice, we could make this world a paradise. If our hearts weren't cold as ice, we could make this world a paradise.
What a perfect sentiment. We all do wish, we all do hope and pray for that time when people will understand that we have more to gain by being brothers and sisters in the dance of life than to be at battle with each other. You are 100% right.
That was my aim in writing the song. And
it's beautiful.
Unfortunately, watching the news, you know, yeah, you see the opposite.
That's true. I mean, I don't know what the turning of the screw will be, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know, and I think nobody really knows, but we've seen the quickening of all of these things. It seems like the storm is gathering, has been gathering, and you know, there's a good energy and there's the other, and how they're going to come to peace with each other. I don't know the answer, but we have to keep trying. I mean, I think...
That's right. I like to think that there's, you know, good and bad and, you know, whatever ethnic group or religion you happen to be in the world, and I wish, you know, more of the positive things would come to the fore.
Yeah, don't we all? We just have to keep, you know, praying and hoping that, especially in this country, whoever is taking the helm will understand the, you know, what they're dealing with and how to deal with it in a way that furthers peace instead of whatever else.
I agree.
I mean, nobody really knows. I mean, I'm not happy myself with any of the choices for various reasons. Some people are happy with some of the choices. Who knows if any of them are going to prevail? I mean, it's just an election. Myself, I have never felt so conflicted about the choices. There are things I like about some of the folks, and there are things about them that block me from wanting to support them with my whole heart. So what to do?
I understand, and I have conversations because I have my own viewpoints, and I like two of the candidates. They happen to be on the Democratic side.
Of course. Well, I would definitely suspect that.
And I just hope that, you know, somebody wins who knows what they're doing.
Amen. Yeah. That's definitely the plan.
We hope so.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's see. You know what? I wanted to put the name of your song, and I got the wrong thing here. Oh, boy. So, that was...
Everyone Wants to Go to Paradise.
Right. Oh, this lovely software. it's the bane of my existence. Oh, dear. We are required to enter in as we, you know, do this.
For the playlist?
Yeah, the playlist, you know. All right, so that's enough of that. So this song, you gave the background of it, and how quickly did it come to you? Was it one of the songs that kind of rolled off, or was it you had to go back to it? And, you know,
That particular one I wrote 2 or 3 years ago, and it did really roll off fairly quickly, like in a day or two.
Oh,
sometimes
that's
great. I struggle with a song for a lot longer than that, but you know, happened to be attuned into the emotions involved in that particular song at that time, and I found what I'd like to be a good guitar riff and kind of fit the emotions, and it came together quickly.
Well, that's...
Doesn't always work.
No. Well, I think that's, you know, that's a good sign that it actually, you know, came to you like that. Oh, this little thing is just being ridiculous. Oh, boy. I make the corrections, and then the corrections aren't there. Now they are. Okay, we're good.
Okay.
So you said that you have some gigs coming up, not some in the area, some further out. So what?
Yes, I did have a lot of gigs in this area up here in Boston, January, February, March. Just happens that in May I have a gig down in Philadelphia on May 21st at...
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, Malalani Cafe.
Oh, that's
which
nice.
Is in Mount Airy, Philadelphia, on May 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a gig up here in Concord, Massachusetts, with a couple of good friends of mine on June 8th at the Main Street Cafe in Concord, Mass.
Oh, that's local, yeah.
I'm going to be there with Ruth Ann Baylor, who is Sam's mother,
who
produced albums. Junko Ogawa, who's a wonderful Japanese-American songwriter,
mm-hmm.
and Branson Beaufat, who is an excellent finger-picking style guitarist.
So is that a Sunday?
No.
What day of the week?
I,
Oh, wait.
It's either a Wednesday or Thursday.
Wednesday. Oh,
I'd have to look it up. And then in June, I also will be down in my native New Jersey. I should say native. That's where I grew up.
Yeah.
In Ventnor, New Jersey, at the Ventnor Coffee House on June 17th, which Ventnor's a suburb of Atlantic City, and I'm originally from there.
Ha! Who knew? I didn't know all of this.
Yep.
I don't think I recalled any of that information.
Yeah, I've lived up in Boston since after college, so it's been my whole adult life, but I'm originally from Atlantic City area.
Huh. Now, did you go to school up here?
I got a master's in Providence.
Oh, Providence, okay.
So I was up here in New England at the time.
Yeah.
I went to, my bachelor's was at Rutgers, which is in New Jersey. And I came up here after my bachelor's college years.
Now, what was your degree and what was your training?
Well, my bachelor's is in English, which helps me write.
Yeah, yeah.
It hasn't helped me make a living, but which is why I work in the computer field.
Yeah.
My master's is in counseling, which I worked at various agencies and hospitals for about 7 years up in Boston and in Worcester. And then I found that I would like to not be starving to death. So I went back to computer school. Actually, I was here in Somerville. And I've been working in the IT field, which I still work in, as a business systems analyst now for 30 years.
That was a long time. So when did you start the music aspect?
Well, the music was what I did in high school and early years in college, and I was playing this finger-picking guitar style that I do, and then it kind of just fell off in my mid to late 20s, and I didn't start playing again until I was around 50.
Wow. Okay.
Which I'm not going to say how many years ago that was, but I started after taking my daughter to a Rolling Stones concert at the Garden, and I saw the Rolling Stones. They did an acoustic set, including Mick Jagger playing an acoustic guitar.
Wow, cool.
So it was Mick and Keith and Ronnie Wood playing acoustic guitar, and I just thought, those guys look like they're having a good time, and they're all older than me, so...
Bully, huh? Why can't I?
Yeah, why exactly? And I
haven't
stopped playing since.
That's a marvelous story. I wonder if they'd like to know about that inspiration that they created in you. That's lovely.
That would be nice to be able to talk to them.
Yeah, well.
I do have a good friend who I went to high school with, who's in the Jay Giles band.
He's there you go.
Keyboard player Seth Justman, who went to Atlantic City High School. We went together, and he's still a good friend of mine. He lives up here in the area, and we've shared stories like that because they used to play on the same bill with the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, yeah,
so
that's
we've shared several stories.
That's fantastic. Well, if you know, not that it really will matter, but it would be fun. It would be fun to share that piece of
with
inspiration.
Mick and Charlie and Keith.
I connected up with the boys many years ago. I went to see several concerts, but when I lived in London, they were doing a recording session, which I was at. They were also, when they did their live concert at the Chalk Farm Roundhouse, I ended up going by mistake. I didn't even have a ticket. I was going to hear Gilberto Gil, who was a refugee from Brazil. He and Gaetano Veloso were performing. And I got in the line and everything goofed up. And I ended up being shoved here and there. And lo and behold, I'm in this Rolling Stone concert. It was nuts. Beyond nuts. It was crazy. And I ended up not only that, but being pushed across the stage, backstage, so you can imagine how nuts it was, and scared to death. I was totally terrified.
So were you with the Rolling Stones?
I was there. I was back there in the, and that's a whole long story. Some of the time I'll tell you, but it was terrifying. But then I got to be in the Olympic recording studio. I was helping Monica Daneman. And so these are all, you know, long stories. But
am I mistaken, or did you go to one of Mick Jagger's weddings?
I did.
Yeah,
I was on my way, uninvited. I was on the way, and instead of going to Cape Verde, I went to Cannes to the film festival. The train went this way, and
So you didn't get to the wedding?
I did not, which is probably just as well since I wasn't invited.
Right. Was it his wedding with Bianca?
Yes, with Bianca, exactly.
Yeah, I think you shared that story with me in the past.
Oh, good grief. Well, it's true, it's true. But I ended up in Cannes at the film festival, and that was another marvelous escapade of mine. But, you know, we should really hear some more of your wonderful music.
Sure. Well,
hear your stories.
Actually, I'd like to do this song that I really wrote about Bob Dylan.
Oh, great!
Who has been a lifelong idol and influence on me in all his different stages of music.
Uh huh.
And he's gone through, it seems, several different incarnations
at least.
The same lifetime.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So I wrote this song called Master of All Disguises.
Well, that's great.
Which I'd like to do. Suggestion, but I'll give you a clue. You better use your head before deciding what to do. Don't try to define me. I'm warning you, beware. Next time that you look for me, well, I might not be there. And you won't find me. I'm the master of all disguises. I'm inclined to disappear right before your eyes. You haven't done me wrong. I can't stay too long. I just have to ramble on. I just have to ramble on.
I love it. It's great. That was
Thank you. Really nice.
And you definitely have that swagger, that energy in the picking. It's beautiful. It's a very, very nice song. And I think he would love it.
Yeah, that's been I wish I had met him too sometime. But
well, he's doing two dates, one at let's see, out in Tanglewood, which I can't, I do have tickets to this show that's coming up in, is it July 14th, Bastille Day.
Okay.
It's down at the waterfront. Whether or not I'll ever get to connect with him again.
Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yeah, I did.
You did?
I did several times. But now it's... I don't know. I'm not quite as nuts as I used to be, and not as brave. I tried a couple times to, you know, get close, and no, it's just too hard now. I mean, and I understand it because there's so many nutsy people out there. They have to protect the artists, and but you know, in years back, several times, you know, I have some great stories of encounters.
Well, he's probably not very easy to get to know.
No, and the one thing I will tell you, the first time that we met, my girlfriend and I went from, we were living in Eugene, Oregon, and he was performing in Seattle, and he was with the band.
Okay.
So that's it was back in the 70s, and we ended up through a series of bizarre flukes backstage as guests of the drummer, totally bizarre, and... we were the only ones there. It was the band and us. Nobody else. It was crazy. And full formal dinner. Anyway, when I came to the room, Dylan was there. I was there. And we just looked at each other. We didn't say a word. And we went off into this, whatever it was, trance, I don't know. And we didn't say a word for like, it seemed like 5 minutes. And apparently, my girlfriend went in, and the guys in the band were freaking out. Because, first of all, who are we, at period, and who am I, that we're doing this grokking, I call it grokking thing. And we didn't speak. We just kind of, you know, he's a Gemini and so am I. He's got five planets in Gemini. I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
Well, he's certainly...
a great communicator.
Yes, great communicator.
Master,
and has like a dual personality.
At least. Two at any given moment,
And very charismatic, which...
Oh, totally.
Like JFK was a Gemini, too.
I didn't know that.
I think so.
That would kind of make sense.
I think he was.
Well, it was, I mean, I could tell you many things about that encounter, but that was like, that was the essence of the energy exchange, you know, that it was. Yeah.
Unusual,
it
to
was.
Say the least.
It was. It was a rare moment, or moments.
Now, one of his friends, do you know who Kinky Friedman is?
I do, yeah.
Because he's also one of my favorites, and I got to meet him a couple of years ago when he was playing at the Narrow Center of the Arts. And he's one person who did not disappoint me meeting him in person. He is personable and funny and friendly. I really enjoyed meeting Kinky Friedman. And I like his mystery books.
So
also,
I think that he was the co-writer of the play that we went to see about the boots that was Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, Kinky Boots?
Kinky Boots. Wasn't he involved in Kinky
Friedman? I'm not sure that
Friedman?
Kinky Friedman has anything
maybe I'm
to do. I know, know Cyndi Lauper did
Cyndi
a lot
Lauper
of music,
did that. Okay.
I don't think Kinky...
Okay, so you know what? Maybe
Kinky's the one he... ran for governor of Texas a couple of times.
Maybe I don't really know who he is. Kinky. Okay, you're right. I'm mixing things up. Kinky Friedman, Kinky Boots. Yep. Oh, my goodness.
He's a country singer kind of...
Okay.
Both serious and comical.
Okay.
And also writes mystery stories with himself, Kinky Friedman, as the detective, which are very funny, but... also, I think, very well written.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, and he's kind of a real character, like a kind of a cowboy Groucho Marx kind of character.
Neat.
But he's the nicest guy. Anyway.
Well, it's a pleasure when you meet.
But.
No, it's a pleasure, especially in that world of the famous ones, when you meet somebody who's a mensch that's nice to talk to, and they don't treat you like you're, you know, kind of...
No, he's not
that entity. Way. So that's...
And he's a good friend of Willie Nelson.
Oh.
In fact, I've seen him on the Charlie Rose Show with Willie Nelson.
Oh, okay.
He's very funny.
Wow. So that's very cool. Well, we could definitely jaw for a long time. Yep. I think we have lots of stories we could exchange. So other than shows coming up... What other things are you doing? Are you writing more material?
Yes, I try. I don't always succeed, but I try to write a song a month.
Oh, that's good.
Even if I don't, if it's not a keeper.
Okay.
Just to keep my writing chops going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm always practicing guitar. And it's kind of a challenge because I still work full time.
I know. That's a huge challenge.
And I hope some of my IT friends are listening. They might be.
No, that's good.
Yeah, I think my sister's listening down in Atlantic City.
Oh, that's great. Well, tell your friends, too, that the station does archive the shows.
Okay.
So other than just right now live stream, it's up for a couple of weeks. It's not longer because of copyright issues,
yep.
But they can go and, you know, go to the website WMFO.org and then click on the schedule, click on Wednesday 3 to 5 for the voicemobile, and then there's a place for the archive and the date, you know, and hopefully it will be there.
I'll definitely tell them.
Yeah, so that's the way to do that. And also, we should give people a site if they want to connect up with you. Why don't you give them?
Well, my website is CraigSonnenfeld.com, and I'll spell it C-R-A-I-G.
I love it.
Dot. My last name is spelled S-O-N-N-E-N-F, like Frank, E-L-D.com. And right now, it's still up, but I'm trying to look for a website, somebody to take it over, because I'm tired of doing it.
Sure,
and it's got some outdated news on there that I just like somebody to, you know, take over. So if anyone out there's a web maven, which I'm not, I can do a little bit.
Yeah.
You can write to me through at craig@craigsonnenfeld.com, and I'd certainly consider paying you to take over the website.
There you go. There's the gig.
There you go.
Uh-huh. So
contributing to employment.
Right. That's a good thing. Well, it's another whole thing. I have a friend who is managing an artist who I don't know if you've heard of, Laser Lloyd. He's a blues guitarist from Israel. He's from America.
He's been on your show.
Yes, he has.
I saw him on your...
Yeah.
On Facebook. He was on a couple of weeks
ago. Yeah, he toured in the air. He did this new club called the Thunder Road, which is a club that's across from the Market Basket on Somerville Ave.
Okay.
And of course, now that Johnny D's is shut, it's nice to have another neighborhood place. And I met the owners. They're very nice people. They have a lot of local acts, a few national acts coming through. And he was there with a bass player and a drummer and killed it. I mean, he's considered the king of the blues in Israel.
Okay.
And he's done a lot of the festivals. Anyway, his manager is doing everything. And, you know, she finally got somebody to take over the artwork of all the posters and stuff. It's like another, you don't have time to do all these things. And, you know, and you're trying to do everything. It's too much.
I'm trying to do, I've worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do my music. I've got a family.
Yeah, no. It's a
the
huge
whole deal.
It's a huge amount, and I give you a lot of props for, you know, staying in the game, because obviously you love it, or you wouldn't be doing it.
Absolutely.
So do you want to play? And I don't know exactly how much time you have.
I have time.
You have time. You're good. Okay.
Took the afternoon off.
Here we are.
In no rush.
All right. Let me just tell folks, if you're just tuning in, where the hell have you been? My guest is Craig Sonnenfeld, and he's been playing live for us in the studio. This is The Voice Mobile. I'm your host, Joyce The Voice, here at WMFO at Tufts University. And we're going to hear another song, which is going to be called...
I think I'd like to do this newer song of mine, which is called I've Forgotten Why.
Okay.
And, you know, when I've heard Bob Dylan say this too, when you write a song, the I, or first person in the song, is not necessarily the writer. Otherwise, there wouldn't be fiction and prose, and I don't know why. I write these songs, and people come up to me and say, oh, did this really happen to you? And some of it did. Some are autobiographical, but some are stories, which have, of course, some of the author in them.
Right.
So this one, it has a little bit of both, because it's written from the point of view of a songwriter who was once a fiery protester, but has mellowed and now is questioning his thoughts in his youth.
Yeah.
So this is I've Forgotten Why.
Okay.
Once I thought I had the answers, and I'd write them in my songs. I would be the one to tell you what was right and what was wrong. I took the bait and I just couldn't wait to get up on stage and take a bow. But I've forgotten why it still matters to me now. An angry troubadour for justice, exhaling rage with every breath, ready to take on any rival, ready to fight unto the death. I was young, and yes, I had sung all the anthems of the hammer and the plow. I've forgotten why it still matters to me now. Sometimes I stop and wonder, did I do the world some good? Sometimes I start to question, did I do all that I could? You may say that I have faltered from my idealistic ways, but my vision has been altered. And white have turned to gray. It seems so long since I wrote the song that spells out what was fair and what was foul. But I've forgotten why it still matters to me now. I've forgotten still matters to me now.
Well, that was so relaxing. You have such a nice way with your lyrics, and the tone of your voice is, to me, it's very comforting, and your guitar playing is just beautiful with it. I just think you're great.
Well, thanks very much, Joyce.
My goodness.
I appreciate it.
And after the afternoon I had, this is a much, much better frame of reference. I'm really enjoying it. This is like my tonic. My antidote, like you say.
I'm glad I could provide a bit of relief from
solace,
your
yes.
day. Yeah.
Yes. It's, you know, there are many, many, many musicians, but I think not so many who really connect.
Uh-huh.
And that's what matters to me, to find somebody who, you know, this little show that I have, you know, in this little place, but it can go all over the world if people know to tune in. And so, you know, to try and help people who I like.
Well,
not just their music, but, you know, that they have something positive to put into the universe. That's the point.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that, because I try to be positive. It doesn't always work, but...
Absolutely. I mean, having something to say and finding a way to say it. I, you know, played guitar for years. I used to perform. And as a result of Laser coming over to check out my amp, I actually pulled out the amp, pulled out the guitar, pulled out the microphone, and played for, you know, it was like hysterical because, of course, I had to cut the nails and I hadn't played. It was so funny, but it was fun.
Yeah.
It was, I forgot how much fun it could be. And so, you know, I still have my electric guitar and my Martin, and the Ampeg Reverber Rocket is now in Chicago. He bought it and wrote a song with it, and they're going to send it to me. So he had all these great guitars he was checking it out with. It was quite a treat. But it's a wonderful thing to take the time to figure out something to say, to share, and to find the musical setting for it. I mean, it's not a simple thing.
It isn't a simple thing, and but I found myself years ago when after that Rolling Stones concert, questioning myself, like, I work all day and I'm watching mindless television.
Yeah, exactly.
With terrible things on it.
Yep.
Or stupidities.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I used to do, at least attempt to write when I was young. Maybe not like I do now, but I always enjoyed listening to music even when I wasn't playing. So I listened to all kinds of music, classical, jazz, folk, rock, world music, and a lot of stuff has seeped in.
Yeah, and finding your voice. I mean, that's really what sets an artist apart. And the ultimate thing is, you have a way of saying something. You have things to say that only you, really, it's coming through you, who you are. And that's right. That's what makes it interesting. And that's what connects with people, because people recognize that. Those who want to let something come in that will touch them, you just have to now find your audience, and you're doing that. You're putting in the hours, schlepping yourself around and meeting your community, you know, along the way. I mean, I wonder how you find the different clubs, but obviously the network of people, one person helps another and tells person, and you get to find out what the route is.
Well, there's a very nice community of talented people up here in both Boston and Providence and the greater New England area, mm-hmm. Connecticut, that I've met since I've been doing this, and some great artists and some people who've been encouraging to me, and then I try to encourage others who I meet. So it's been a really nice experience.
Yeah, that's great. And I always, you know, I'm open to, you know, if there are people out there that you think I should know about,
sure,
you know, or tell them to contact me.
I will.
Because that's what, you know, I like to do, is to be able to provide a vehicle through which people could get a larger audience. And they could find people who didn't know that they would like this person. So there was a period of time where I sort of backed away from having guests, because it was just a challenge to... I leave work and I jet over here, and now, of course, it's the schlepping up the hill.
Yes.
But, you know, so it's, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's just another challenge.
Well, one of the things is, and I try to make it as least as possible, but music industry, even, you know, the kind of music that we do, or that I do and friends do, it's always a business. So, you know, I have enough of that in my regular job.
Right.
And I've play the game a little bit, but I really don't like to. Maybe if someday I have a manager, somebody can play it for me. But I like to, you know, just make contacts and play where I can.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guilty of not promoting myself, maybe as much as I can, or like I used to when I was first starting and playing around.
Well, it's exhausting.
It is.
It's a lot of energy. Yeah, it's an awful lot of energy. I mean, I know this friend that I was talking about, Yochevet, she's constantly, and I had another friend who was doing this out of Woodstock, and she was dealing with a lot of jazz folks, and it was an amazing amount of work.
Yep.
Just doing that business piece of it. And for an artist to have to do both,